You can't change your genetic code, but you can change how it's expressed. You may not be able to change the structures of your body, but you can change the way they function.
Welcome to the Ignited Recovery Podcast, a new way forward for anyone looking for answers but feeling left out. If you've been searching for empowerment, triumph, and purpose, you've found them right here. You won't hear the same solutions, and you're not going to have any excuses to fall back on, because Ignited Recovery allows heroes to rise and become their best selves. I'm Dr. Adi Jaffe, and I can't wait to be your guide on this journey. Are you ready to become an Ignited Hero?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Ignited Recovery Secrets Podcast. I'm Adi Jaffe, and I'm so happy to be here with you today. In the book, The Abstinence Myth, I talk about four factors I see involved in addiction all the time, and that is biology, psychology, environment, and spirituality. Most of the time, I talk about environmental influences, which are rarely talked about, and then spirituality, which I really associate with contribution and being purposeful and having a higher meaning to what you do on a daily basis. And I stay away from biology and psychology because those are the ones that get the attention most of the time. But I wanted to flip that a little bit today and talk about biology in a way that I haven't in a really, really long time. I want to do this for a couple of reasons. First of all, there are really amazing interventions and things that you can do biologically that I think not too many people know about, or definitely not too many people use. That's number one. And the second is, most of the time when people think of biology, they think of the two biggest pieces that everybody always discusses in biology, and there's genetics and medication. Everybody has heard this idea or has heard somebody say, I have the addictive gene. I've talked about that before. We will link to an episode where we talked about genetics. You don't have the addictive gene. And the second one has to do with medication. And everybody is always, literally the National Institute on Drug Addiction and IAAA, everybody's always looking for the next most amazing medication that will fix and solve addiction forever. I'm going to leave that up to those guys. I don't personally believe there ever will be a medication that fixes all addiction, but all the more power to them. And I hope that there are more and more medications that saves lives, like Suboxone and, you know, Naloxone and things like that, for individual uses in particular cases that have been helping hundreds of thousands of people. Those are all amazing. I'm not going to talk about any of those. If that's what you want here today, this will be the wrong podcast episode for you. I want to talk about the things around genetics and medication that never really get mentioned. There are much more nuanced pieces to the conversation we can have. And unfortunately, because they don't get talked about, people stick to medication and genetics all the time. And when those don't give you the fixes and the answers that you really, really want, we give up on biology. I don't think that's the right approach either. So what I want to talk about is a couple of things. First of all, there are a couple of different ways to intervene biologically. One of them is with conditions that existed before the use, before the addiction ever set in. That could be anxiety, depression, a whole host, you know, I have impulsivity issues, risk-taking, things of that nature that were there before the drug-taking took place. Oftentimes, the drug-taking itself was a way to fix that, right? So that's one thing. The other way is to intervene in elements that were created because of the substance use, right? The tolerance developed by the substance use, the changes in your body, right? Drugs and behaviors, when you do them in certain ways, but even like sugars and fats, et cetera, they change your body, and they change your body in meaningful ways, especially if you end up relying on them for coping, especially if you do them long-term, and especially if they develop into an addiction. So you can intervene either in the things that already existed before the addiction set on, or you can intervene in the things that the addiction itself created. Those are two different pieces. And then there are two different effects that you can expect to happen from the biological intervention. One of them is a change in your state. What is state, right? So let's just define state versus trait, right? State are the kind of things that are momentarily affected. Environmental changes affect them. A single incident of something happening around you. When you get scared and you get agitated, you kind of jump up and down. That's a state change, right? Your momentary way of being, the way you look at the world, the way your body is activated in the moment, is in a state, right? You're in a state of shock. You're in a state of panic, right? And so some behavioral biological interventions will affect your state. They will have a momentary effect. I would argue most of the time when you use drugs or you watch porn or you eat a bunch of donuts, that's a state biological intervention. You do something, it changes your biology for a short period of time. But then there are also trait-based interventions, right? There are things you do over time and they cause deeper, more meaningful, long-term changes in your biology. And so we're going to talk about all those things. And I'm going to try to still stick this to being pretty short today so you're not being inundated with information, but we'll have links below for ways in which you can learn more and more about some of these things. I'm going to try to be succinct. I'm going to try to give you the big hitters, and then we will potentially, if you are interested, dive in more deeply to some of these in the future. But these are going to be things that can help you starting immediately today, some of the interventions, and then some that will take a little bit longer. All right, so when we start out talking about biology, people talk about genetics all the time. They talk about genetics all the time. In the past, we really did believe that your genetics were your blueprint. They created who you are, and it was never changed. So total trait way of looking at things, right? You are who your genes determine you are, and you can never change it. That is also the thinking of, you know, I have an addictive gene, things of that nature, et cetera. What people forget about that is that we've known now for 15, 20, 25 years about this concept of epigenetics. And epigenetics is the way in which your genes get displayed to the world. What genes get activated versus which genes get suppressed. So for instance, let me just say this, right, for those of you watching the video maybe, the tip of my finger and the inside of my eye and every one of my brain cells has the same genetics, the same gene, the same blueprint in it. And yet they're obviously very different things, right? The tip of my finger, the cells inside my eye, or my brain cells. Very, very different types of cells. What makes a difference? The activation of certain genes and the suppression of others is what makes it different. Well, guess what? That doesn't only happen long-term. It happens in the short and medium term as well. And things you do in your everyday life can affect your epigenetics, which then can fully override essentially some of the genetic coding that you came in with, right? Totally suppressing risk gene and activating protective genes. So I want to be really, really simple here because I want you to be able to practice things you can do right away.
We get so many messages, comments, and emails from so many of you listeners from our community on how much our podcast and Ignited has supported your growth and your life, that our presence has become a form of mentorship.
And in order to continue that support and to connect more deeply with some of you in our community, I've recently joined MentorCam, an app that connects you to experts like myself that you just may not otherwise have access to for personalized one-on-one advice and ongoing mentorship. You can find experts on a variety of topics related to career development, dating and relationships, and health and wellness, with whom you can connect and engage with in a private conversation through video messages in the app. Each and every message is purposefully created to answer your specific question.
Mentoring is invaluable. We are creatures of habit and comfort, but to continue to grow and better ourselves in our society, we need to step out of our own bubble, out of our own way, and tap into the power of one another, which is exactly what MentorCam allows us to do.
And I want to make myself available to as many of you as I can. And so for our Ignited listeners, I'm doing a special promotion. I'm offering a response to your first question on MentorCam for only $1.99. So if I don't think you can get away with $1.99 for an answer from me at this point.
No.
You can download the app in the App Store on your iPhone or Android device by searching for MentorCam. And so just download the app and ask me your question. Let's dive deeper. I'm holding the 5-minute journal in my hand. This is a journal I use every day to focus on positivity, create a positivity bias in my life, reduce stress, and kind of plan for what I want in the day. That reduces my level of activation of stress. Stress is one of the biggest predictors of risky epigenetic activation. And so by doing that, literally 5 minutes a day, I get to control my stress and anxiety level and change my epigenetic activation. I use superfood coffee. I've now created my own sort of version of a deeply complex bulletproof coffee at some point, depending on my diet, et cetera. And we'll talk more about that in a second. But things like adaptogens, good fats, protein, and then caffeine as well in the morning can be incredibly useful to recenter you and activate you and yet feed and nourish your body all at the same time. When you do these things, right, cacao, maca, other superfoods that we use in our daily diet here at our house, you are changing the epigenetic activation of your genetic blueprint, and that can have long-term impact. So both affect you in the state in the moment and also in trait in terms of long-term impact. Now, some practices we know greatly affect your epigenetics and your biology by themselves. So mindfulness and meditations are two of those practices, but I also know that that scares a lot of people when I say that the first time, right? They think themselves, I got to sit like a Buddhist on a mountaintop and be a monk. That's not true at all. And I want to introduce to you this 5-minute mindful walking exercise I do with a lot of my clients where you literally just walk outside, right? And literally just take steps and count your steps as you walk. You can do it while you walk your dog if you want. I love doing it in the morning when there's almost nobody around. Counting your steps. If you ever miss the count, you realize you start thinking about something else, it's all good. You reset and you start counting from one again. Massive, massive impact I've seen in my own life and the life of clients. Reducing activation, centering you, making you more present. And again, huge benefits in terms of your epigenetics. If walking is hard for you, you can't go out and walk in that moment, just literally a 1 to 2 minute breathing exercise, 5 deep breaths, followed by a hold and a release. You can do box breathing, which is 5 seconds of each. So you breathe in for 5 seconds. You hold for 5. And you release for 5. Do that. At least 5 repeats of it. It'll have huge, huge payoff in terms of your levels of activation. Then there's also supplementation. I don't know what your vitamin D absorption is like in the winter, or just generally the vitamins, the amino acids, and things of that nature that you are receiving, but look into it. We have an entire group at Ignited, and we talk about it quite a bit in the program itself in terms of amino acid supplementation. We have a whole workshop on it. Why? Because your body requires good nutrition, good ingredients in order to build the building blocks that then create the proteins, which then make up who you are as a human being. You may not think about this, but almost your entire physical body changes every 7 to 10 years. Literally, like all the cells in your body change out every 7 to 10 years. How do they do it? They do it with the stuff you feed yourself. Make sure you're giving your body the right water and the right amount of nutrition. Okay, so that's biology on a very, very basic level. But I want to talk about some techniques that I've seen having incredible power in altering your biology in more nuanced and clinical kind of intervention ways. What do I mean by that? I mean, like you literally go to see somebody and they do something with you. They create an intervention that then changes you. I can't talk enough about biofeedback and neurofeedback. When I used to run alternatives, a treatment center out here in LA, we saw amazing results with biofeedback and neurofeedback interventions. There are a lot of different techniques. You won't be able to do most of these at home. I'll talk about one at least that you can, and we'll give you a link to that. But these are techniques that use electrodes and use computer interfaces where you literally are sitting in front of a screen playing video games of sorts, and they alter the way your brain acts. Now, again, they do this in two ways. They do it in terms of the state, the way you feel in the moment. You can feel very relaxed or very focused, very sleepy, or very activated, right? Depending on the biological intervention that they give you. But when you practice these things over long term, just like the things I just talked about a few moments ago, they create a trait sort of effect, right? Things that last weeks, months, and even years into the future. So I would really look into that. We've had Muse on here, and we'll have a link for you with those guys. Circadia is another one. And then there's some PMF interventions, and that we've talked about here. We'll give you links to all the devices and a little summary of each one of them. These are interventions you have to practice because, again, they create kind of state momentary effect. But what you really want is the ongoing practice and the change they create in your brain long term. One thing that you can very easily, so those devices, actually Muse, et cetera, you can do at home. But you can also go to clinicians that do really deep biofeedback and neurofeedback work. And that is cool. One that is really simple is something called HRV, heart rate variability. Heart rate variability has been researched almost more than any biological invention I know of, including a lot of medications. And it seems really simple. It's about the syncing of the different, so your heart has 4 chambers, and heart rate variability has to do with your body and your heart's ability to control the rhythm of the activation of those 4 chambers. It sounds really complex, and it kind of is, right? But essentially, if you think about it, the more adaptable your heart is, connected to your brain, the more it's saying that your body is tailored to react to things as they happen in the environment. When you have really good heart rate variability, that means your heart can turn up, turn down, and change its rhythm as the environment necessitates it. And you can train your heart rate variability. We'll give you a link to a device by a company called M-Wave. Really, really simple device you can use on your phone or on your laptop. They work a little bit better on your laptop or your desktop. And you can get really daily training on heart rate variability. Pretty powerful stuff. You should check it out. Okay. Now, part of the thing that I want to talk about as I close this out here today almost completely is obviously part of the biological intervention is changing the way these substances intervene with you. And I know a lot of you who listen specifically want to target alcohol and are having issues with alcohol. So I want to talk about this, and it's a pretty big issue. When you drink, from the moment the alcohol, the moment the drink touches your tongue, your body reacts in ways that it has learned to react over time. Really, if you think about it, oftentimes you get the relief from the drink the moment it touches your tongue. Well, that's not the alcohol. That's the learning that your body has done over time about what effects the alcohol is going to deliver later. Okay. Now, there are some things we can do to intervene with that. What do I mean? I've talked about this a handful of times, but first of all, make sure you stock your refrigerator with other things that you like drinking. Some of them can have sugars in them. Some of them can just have tastes that you really, really admire. But I want you to still have that same joy the moment the drink touches your tongue. That's a very important component of this. I don't love drinking water. I drink it now because it's good for me, but I didn't for decades because I hated the taste of water. And when I was quitting drugs and alcohol for a while, I replaced with other things. Ginger beer was a big one for me until I found out how much sugar that stuff had in it. And I tried to get more fit. And so I eliminated that eventually. But I want you to play with these things. Now, we've covered some of them, like Toast and Amass, Demerak Gin. They have both a real alcohol-based gin and an alcohol-free version of gin if you really want to still keep that cocktail flavor and the classic feeling of a cocktail. Whatever it is, I want you to really think to yourself, what am I getting out of this? How can I get some of that through non-alcoholic drinks? And then you get options, right? You can totally shift to non-alcoholic drinks. You can alternate. You can mix in order to reduce the amount of alcohol. You get to play with this. It's not a one-size-fits-all. But remember, part of the reason we're having this intervention is because of the effect, the biological effect that the substances, the chemicals have when they enter your body. You can intervene even at that level. Now I want to talk about something I haven't talked about a lot in here. And that is something that I only discovered really in the last 4 to 5 years as I was losing a lot of vitality. I'm 44 going on 45 here. And in my mid 30s, I started noticing that I was starting to lag. My focus was dropping even lower. My energy, I would sleep 8-9 hours and still be tired. I had no motivation during the day. Now I'd used a lot of meth for a lot of years, like 4, 5, 6 years of just being high on meth all day, every day. And I think part of what happened is I taxed my system. I pushed it as hard as it could, and now it's slowly kind of given up on me. Went, and after a lot of blood tests and too much missed opportunity by my physicians, we found a lot of hormone dysfunction. So my thyroid was way off. My testosterone was way off. And over the last 4 or 5 years, I've gradually replaced those and played with hormone replacement. Some people are afraid of this stuff. I've just decided it was getting a little too extreme for me. Didn't matter how much I was working out, I couldn't get in shape. It didn't matter how much I slept, I couldn't have energy. And I didn't want to get on antidepressants. This was my version of it. I'm going to give you a link to the company that I use, Helix, and they actually do home visits and they're not that expensive to be able to do this stuff at home if you're in one of the cities they serve. But if Helix is not right for you, fine, go to your physician and get these tests done. You will always underestimate how big of an impact your hormones have on your physical functioning. And we're not only talking state, we're definitely talking long-term impact. Everything from energy, physical fitness, fat content, libido, focus and motivation, they're all related to hormonal releases at some point. And so I would really, really urge you to look into those things. Now, I've spent 20 minutes covering very quickly some biological interventions, and I've just barely scratched the surface. I haven't touched any deep biohacking stuff. I'll tell you over the last, again, 4, 5, 6 years with that energy drop and all those other things, I was really playing a lot with nootropics, deeper, more intense, fasting and intermittent fasting and keto lifestyles and all those sorts of things. You can do those if you want to. You can decide that you don't want to. But what I'm saying is all of those, the entire list of specific kind of interventions that I just mentioned are all hacks. They're all ways to intervene in your biology. You can't change your genetic code, but you can change how it's expressed. You may not be able to change the structures of your body, but you can change the way they function. Just because people talk about this genetic gene all the time, I do not want you to give up on your opportunity to intervene at the biological level. You are not a slave to your biology. Let me say that again. You are not a slave to your biology, not at all. You actually get way more control than you imagine. So I want you to take this to heart. I want you to make a list of the things that just resonated with you and really seemed to you like, you know, these are exactly the kind of interventions, the kind of things, the kind of tools, techniques that I want to potentially try in my own life, because he talked about effects that are relevant to me. And then let us know about ones that you may want to hear more deeply about. I can't tell you enough how biology and psychology are important when addressing your addiction or the addiction of a loved one, but sometimes the origin has nothing to do with the end point, right? So it's like, we may be thinking that somebody has an alcohol problem, but in reality, the depression and anxiety that they felt at a young age because of biological needs or because of some of their biological risk factor and genetics and epigenetics combined created this effect that they were very anxious all the time. And so alcohol just fixed that. If you just fix the alcohol, you're not fixing the anxiety. We need to be able to understand biology, psychology, in addition to environment and spirituality, and to really address most of the world's addiction problems. I hope this was useful. We will have links for you here below. I'm more than open to having many, many more biological discussions. I studied behavioral neuroscience at UCLA when I was getting my PhD, and so that was my area of expertise. If this was helpful for you, let me know. Email us, info@ignited.com. Let me know what you want to hear more about. Hit me up at Dr. Adi Jaffe on Instagram. Let me know what resonated with you and what you want more of. Have a great, great weekend. See you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ignited Heroes Recovery Podcast. I really hope you found the information here useful and that we'll see you back here next week. And look, I want to make sure that this podcast is the most useful it can be for you, so please let me know by emailing info@ignited.com if there are any specific topics or questions you'd like to have addressed. As usual, if you like this episode, I would love for you to leave us a 5-star review and rating. Thanks, and see you next week.